Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally, 7 days a week here in the United States, and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Freemasonry. Antichrist upon us when we come back. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. We've been taught from childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if a plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said, well, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? You know, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Listen to James Nielsen. Now, he's a professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he had to say about our budding lawyers. He said, quote, "It is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. It's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a classroom and without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, it is a cruel hoax." That's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, just call the law school at 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. A courtroom strategy and procedures available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. We hear a lot about conspiracy and conspiracy theories. Well, just what is a conspiracy? What are these conspiracy theories, and how does Freemasonry and Bible prophecy and the Book of Revelation, the Antichrist, fit in to this New World Order and the conspiracy? Or the conspiracy theory, however you want to word it. Well, let's return to an examination of the conspiracy. You know, there have been tens of thousands of books written over the past 200 years blowing the whistle on the existence of and the personnel in and the number of conspiracies. Some of these conspiracies are real and some imagined. Now, the majority of books written in the last few decades have been written by authors with considerable weight and considerable right-of-center viewpoints. During the Cold War, these writers mainly viewed them in terms of the so-called worldwide communist conspiracy. Or, like Rush Limbaugh or John Stormer, They saw a conspiracy of the poorly understood and ill-defined, the left, using communism and socialism as pawns in their game. A few conspiracy books, like Gary Allen's None Dare Call It Conspiracy, have come from shocked liberal journalists slam-dunked into tight right tailspins by their discoveries. Recently, since the death of communism, probably prematurely announced, and the disappearance of the phrase the New World Order on the tongues of the world's leading politicians like George Bush Sr., a number of writers now from the far right and from the far left, and from a remarkable amount of country in between, have denounced an astonishing variety of conspiracies, including, but not limited to, but they've denounced the clearly criminal activities of some government officials, such as the theft by Ed Meese's Justice Department of the Promise software from InSlaw and their subsequent driving of that company into bankruptcy in an attempt to hide the crime, all the while selling it illegally to police departments all over the world. To outrage over treasonous dirty tricks like the October Surprise, you know, the alleged deal between the Reagan-Bush campaign back in 1980 and the Iranians to keep the American embassy hostages captive in Iran until after the election to prevent Jimmy Carter from pulling off an October Surprise of getting them released before the November election and in so doing possibly win re-election. Then there was the high-handed contraventions of congressional wishes, such as Oliver North's Iran-Contra gun-running scheme, not to mention the Central Intelligence Agency's alleged use of the returning planes by filling them with cocaine to raise the black budget fund. And then there was the mounting frustration with federal regulatory agencies staffed by men from the industries that they were supposed to regulate, which stifles competition, and worse, agencies such as the FDA, which are largely manned by individuals who, after they serve their time at the FDA, then they go on to jobs with 5- and 6-figure incomes in the very drug companies that they were supposed to have been watchdogging. Then there are the actions of seemingly out-of-control federal agencies like the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, I call that BATF, and its botched raids on the Weavers at Ruby Ridge, Idaho, and the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas. Then we get to the more traditional concerns over our mounting national debt, federal deficit spending, and the abuses of the IRS and the FBI and other government agencies. Then there are the suspicions that international bankers and currency speculators may be controlling the American economy through the privately owned banks of the Federal Reserve System and manipulation of interest and currencies at home and abroad. The power of the ruling elite and their organizations for societal control, particularly the philanthropic trusts, you know, like the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers. All the way to off-the-deep-end stories of the government cutting deals with aliens from outer space. Well, unfortunately, I don't have the space here or the time to document the existence of any particular conspiracy, nor to prove this or that individual's participation in it. But what I can do here is to give you a brief overview of a few basic conspiracy theories so as to give an insight into who might want to use the harp-like device to affect changes in society, or even the salvation or the eradication of life on planet Earth, or maybe Freemasonry and the various groups and organizations around the world trying to set up this New World Order. Now, the New World Order, it's a term that we've heard over the last 15 years. In fact, George Bush Sr. started using it in public. At the top, big business and big banking are really one vast interlocked system one controlled by a few men and a handful of women at the very apex of our society. This has been accomplished by virtue of their sitting on each other's boards of directors, owning each other's stock, marrying into each other's families, having institutional interconnections into government and other sectors of society, like academia and labor unions and charitable organizations. This interwoven web of relationships, possibly dominated by the international bankers such as the Rockefellers and Rothschilds, could be the conspiracy. The international bankers, to some degree, run both the governments of the world and the major national and multinational banks and multinational corporations from their position in the heart of this web of financial, familial, and political connections. They're among the oldest of the old money ruling elites, and many of them are royalty, with connections that go back many centuries. They finance governments as well as businesses, gaining a say in the operations of both. They also own or they have control of, by way of director interlocks, voting blocks of stock, interlocking boards of directors, the media, newspapers, movies, radio and television around the world indirectly. They control the information that reaches us all. These super rich have also played a role in the creation of the think tanks, like the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions and the Brookings Institution in the United States, or the Royal Institute for Foreign Affairs and the Tavistock Institute in England, and citizens' advisory and cooperation groups like Cecil Rhodes Roundtable in England and the Group Bilderberg and the Club of Rome under NATO. Then there's the Council on Foreign Relations here, or the Worldwide Trilateral Commission. These organizations are where the opinions of government and business are formulated before being promulgated by their lackeys in the media. People, you know, like Tom Brokaw, the CBS Evening News with Dan Rather. In the United States, these organizations also draft model legislation for introduction to Congress. And throughout this century, many of these legislative enactments have regularly been rubber stamped into law by the president and by the congressmen that passed them. Long ago, members of the power elite recognized that change was inevitable, and they could see that their only wise course of action was to become the agents of that change and to control the direction of history into avenues that would be the least damaging and the most profitable to their economic empires. They have had the time and the resources to set up mechanisms among themselves to arrive at a consensus of what it is that they want to accomplish, as well as the wealth to carry it out and the will to carry out these plans that these organizations have developed. Their large endowments to colleges and universities have seldom been motivated by simple civic pride. These have been used to create special schools, like the Model School at Columbia, and other academic organizations, like the Center for Advanced Studies at Stanford. These institutions have aided in the internal deliberations among the wealthy by supplying experts and generations of student intellectual manpower. Additionally, these schools were used to train both the elite and their hand-picked employees in the skills needed to implement their desires through such programs as the Rhodes Scholarships. And further, the elite have been instrumental in the creation of governmental agencies, such as the Atomic Energy Commission, the Food and Drug Administration, and special boards and panels and committees to infiltrate the governmental organization and with themselves and their employees to ensure that their plans are carried out. Daily, Congress relies on the expert testimony of these minions of the conspiracy. And this isn't anything new. They've been doing this for well over a century now. But beyond that, they have even created movements, causes, and perhaps even a New Age religion, or two New Age religions, to control the hearts and minds of the people all over the world. Here in America, this started with the Settlement House movement back in the 1880s. In Europe, it goes back even further. Karl Marx was a hireling of the English Fabian Socialists, a cadre of rich and politically powerful men. Communism and socialism were either created by the elite or subverted by them early on. Today, communism and socialism are sociological Trojan horses, which are meant to create authoritarian governments, which would then fall under the sway of the multinationals. Movements not created by them have been taken over by them, like the environmental movement, which has been used to convert conservationism into the new green form of communism. Communism is no longer red, it's now green. As an environmentalist, I'm appalled at the potential for ecological disaster posed by the HAARP project. Environmental disasters, actual and potential, seem to be part of the conspiracy's plans. On the 12th of September, 1989, the Washington Post reported that Barbara Conable, World Bank president and member of the Trilateral Commission, made a speech in Tokyo, Japan, at a conference on global environment. In the speech, he revealed what appears to be one of the long-range goals of the international banking crowd. He was reported as having said that, quote, while higher temperatures may cause a number of disasters, they might also warm cold and unproductive lands in the north into productivity. Several think tanks with ties to the conspiracy have since produced reports that suggest that global warming is really a good thing after all. The conspiracy has certainly made a great deal of hay off of global warming. They certainly seem to be using it as a vehicle to create a demand for international regulation and monitoring, which would lead ultimately to a one-world government. Some researchers speculate that if HAARP can alter weather patterns, it could secretly be used to create more adverse weather conditions and would make the peoples of the world beg for more global controls, such as the New World Order. And has been reported in the press, many people already believe that HAARP has been used in just that way. Power-mad despots have attempted to subjugate their fellow man since ancient times. Well, could it be that global crisis management be playing into the hands of madmen, giving them a pretext to create a worldwide police state that would make the Nazis look like pikers? It is certainly not inconceivable that Napoleon and Hitler tried to rule the world. You know, once upon a time, Alexander the Great nearly accomplished that goal. Hitler came pretty close. Napoleon wasn't far away from world domination. Some view this push for a global ecological authority as mankind's last great hope. And then others see it as a treasonous criminal conspiracy to destroy the world's legal governments and replace them with a single totalitarian regime. Either one may be right. Now, if the above is more or less true, then it would give the international bankers and their symbiotes, for example, the New World Order, enormous potential not only for unimaginable wealth, but also immense power to control whole societies. This in capsule form is one telling story of the conspiracy, one told primarily from the conspiracy-owned media. and what the far right calls the capsule form of the conspiracy, and the conspirators call them the paranoid ultra-right. The mainstream press, for obvious reasons, ignores the New World Order or insists that it is the figment of the imaginations of demented, gun-toting right-wing loonies. Now, while there may be some truth to that, how do you explain the Declaration of Independence, which was signed on January 30th, 1976? Yeah, that's right. I didn't make a mistake there. That was signed on January 30th, 1976 in Washington, D.C. by 32 senators and 92 representatives. That Declaration of Independence, the new Declaration of Independence, contains this most revealing line. It says, quote, "Two centuries ago, our forefathers brought forth a new nation. Now we must join with others to bring forth a new world order," unquote. Now, many who denounce conspiracy theories and conspiracy theorists insist that the New World Order was just the coalition of allied nations formed to throw the Iraqis out of Kuwait. Yet this Declaration of Independence, signed by top American politicians in 1976, called for the creation of a New World Order more than 15 years before the Gulf War. Some believe that the New World Order is a Freemason plot. Just take a dollar bill out of your pocket, and on the back side of the bill are the obverse and the reverse faces of the Great Seal of the United States of America. Notice the eye in the triangle at the top of the unfinished pyramid. Those are important symbols within Freemasonry. The eye represents a number of things, not the least of which is the all-seeing eye that you see on CBS. It's their logo. It's the all-seeing eye of the Supreme God of the Freemasons, G-A-O-T-U, the Great Architect of the Universe. The unfinished pyramid also represents a number of things, including the idea that God's plan for this world is not yet complete. The pyramid is also a classic depiction of an aristocratic social order with the ruling few at the top and the powerless many at the base. It's a social order, such as what the great architects of the New World Order desire. Beneath the pyramid is a scroll that reads, Novus Ordo Seclorum. That's Latin, and it translates from the Latin as novus, that means new, ordo, order, seclorum, the secular word aka New World Order. For the last 200 plus years, the phrase the New World Order has been something of a campaign slogan for the conspiracy, at least since 1776. Conspiracy researchers around the world were therefore terribly startled when George Bush Sr. began using the phrase New World Order out in public when he was president. This was the equivalent of the conspiracy waving a red flag before the conspiracy research community's eyes. For a more succinct definition of the New World Order, let me offer you the following transcript of author Lindsay Williams when he was speaking on the Jim French Show on KIRO Radio in Seattle, Washington, back in February of 1991. Lindsay Williams said, there's a new expression that's very common now, heard quite often from our president. It's entitled the New World Order, and no one ever seems to know what the definition of the New World Order is. Jim French asked him, well, do you have a definition of it, Lindsay? Is there an official definition of this New World Order? When George Bush says New World Order, just what does it mean? Williams responded, well, there was some very close friends of mine, and also friends of the president, President Bush, who met in Germany recently at what was dubbed the Brandt Commission. It was also called the Fifth Socialist International, a very prestigious group of people. And at their meeting, they formally adopted a definition of the expression, the New World Order. And just a few individuals who were there. Former World Bank President Robert McNamara was one who was there. And by the way, McNamara is a personal friend of President Bush. Former Secretary of Commerce Pete Peterson was present. None other than Newsweek magazine's own editor, Catherine Graham, was there. That's just to name a few of the very prestigious individuals who were there. So the French asked, well, this is called the Brandt Commission? And Williams answered, yes, it's called the Brandt Commission. I don't know why they called it the Fifth Socialist International or why they called it Brandt Commission. All I know is that they met in West Germany, and in the course of their meeting, they officially adopted a definition of the expression New World Order. And all of these individuals approved it. They signed it and said that they officially adopted this as the definition for the first time by any prestigious organization of the expression that's being used by our president and Mr. Gorbachev, of course, along with Mr. Yeltsin, the expression, the New World Order. So Jim French asked, well, just what is their definition? Williams responded, well, let me read it. Here's the quotation. It says, quote, New World Order, a supranational authority to regulate world commerce and industry. An international organization that would control the production and consumption of oil. An international currency that would replace the dollar. A world development fund that would make funds available to free and communist nations alike. An international police force to enforce the edicts of the New World Order. Unquote. Jim French. What are you reading from? Williams responded. This was published in the McIlvany Intelligence Advisor. Don McIlvany produces one of the most respected financial newsletters in the world today. McIlvany got it right from the minutes of the Brandt Commission when they met in West Germany in February 1991. Now, some researchers believe that the major dynamic in world politics is the centuries-old battle between the Vatican, a deposed would-be world government, and a continually shifting coalition of anti-papal forces, possibly coalescing around the Cerebus-like three-headed monster of the British Empire, Freemasonry, and the Rothschild banking empire. Other emerging world forces, such as the Chinese or the radical Islamic world, are generally seen as outside of this basic conspiracy between the new British Empire, which is generally thought to contain the United States, depending on which conspiracy theory you're listening to at the time, and their struggle with the Vatican. Some others, like Lyndon LaRouche, believe that the British oligarchy is the conspiracy. Others believe that the Freemasons are the conspiracy. And some, like the editors of the publications Criminal Politics and The Spotlight, insist that the international bankers are the conspiracy. This coalition of Presbyterians, Methodists, Lutherans, the majority of Masons versus the old Roman Catholic Church seems to show that the object of power plays for world dominance is more than just mere wealth. Is there a religious struggle taking place here? Some say this is the age-old battle between good and evil, between God and Satan. Is Masonry good or is Masonry evil? From a liberal, pro-democratic, humanistic view, Masonry champions the cause of good. It could be argued that the American Revolution was a Masonic revolution. After all, 50 of the 56 signers to the Declaration of Independence were Masons. The American Revolution was masterminded by a cadre of Masons and the aristocratic liberal intelligentsia of the day, with the aid of anti-monarchists and fellow Masons overseas. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Benjamin Franklin, for instance, were all Masons. By some accounts, Masonry has ruled America pretty much. At least 8 American presidents have admitted to being Masons, and some researchers say the actual number is twice that. And the most recent Masons to hold the presidency were George Bush and Ronald Reagan. Bill Clinton denies being a Mason, but he does admit to having been a member of a Masonic youth organization. Now, an argument could be equally made that Masons espouse evil, or is Masonry's evil twin brother, the Illuminati. The Illuminati was officially founded on May 1, 1776 in Bavaria in what today is called Germany. The true purpose of the order, wrote Adam Weishaupt, was to rule the world. To achieve this end, it was necessary for the order to destroy all religions, overthrow all governments, and abolish private property. That's what we see in the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, the abolition of all right to property and land. And he also directed his seemingly anti-monarchist organization to take control of Bavaria through infiltration. Some researchers have suggested that the real architect of the American Revolution might have been Adam Weishaupt, the reputed founder of the ancient and illuminated seers of Bavaria, better known as the Illuminati. Weishaupt and his followers and their heirs have also been fingered as the movers and shakers behind the French and the Russian revolutions as well. The Illuminati figures are very large indeed in many of the conspiracy theories being passed about these days. Definitely a heavyweight contender for being the big conspiracy, if in fact there actually is one. Well, hang on, boys and girls. We've got to take a break here and give you a couple of messages, and we'll be back with more on Freemasonry, Antichrist upon us, when we come back. Keep in mind that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management or staff of the network, or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or just call the law school direct. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School or the Law Hour, please go to the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Tonight's report, Freemasonry, Antichrist upon us. The material that I've been covering is reproduced from a book called HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, by Jerry E. Smith. Well, how much of the goal of the Masons has been realized since the Illuminati was founded back in 1776? Did they succeed? Have they succeeded in infiltrating every aspect of society, controlling us in 100 ways without even our knowing about it? Or did they simply wither away to become a vanished, long-forgotten plot, alive only in the demented minds of paranoids and patriots? Well, Freemasonry is not to be confused with the Illuminati. Or is it? Well, President George Washington, remember, George Washington was a Mason. He declared that none of the lodges in this country are contaminated with the principles ascribed to the Society of the Illuminati. The Illuminati are known to have infiltrated the Freemasons in Bavaria by 1782. It's unknown if they ever did succeed in subverting the lodges in America. After all, Masons do not air their dirty laundry in public very much, and they're alleged to have a nasty habit of covering things up under the bodies, if need be, of their enemies and adversaries. Jack the Ripper, for example, is believed by some researchers to have been a Masonic royal physician who was simply out cleaning up some of the royal family's dirty business. By now, you must have guessed that Freemasonry is more than just guys in funny hats on little cars or in parades, more than just children's hospitals and fundraising circuses. Masonry is one of the oldest secret societies in the world. Masonry has been described as an occult religion with a socio-political agenda. It is decidedly anti-papal, and it is not particularly Christian. At its core, perhaps, is a secularization of the Jewish Kabbalah, a mystery religion, a magic system that is esoteric even to the Jews. Freemasonry has maintained elements from man's earliest religions. Whether these elements were a survival from earlier forms or like so much in the current New Age, a recreation, is a matter of speculation. Are its goals purely secular, as the writings of Weishaupt might suggest, or does it in fact plan to replace the religions of the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Moses, and Jesus with something else? Jim Keith, in his Saucers of the Illuminati, suggests that UFOs are in fact a terrestrial, suppressed secret technology being used by the Illuminati today to control and to manipulate populations, possibly through staged encounters with aliens that are actually intelligence operatives. In his book, Casebook on Alternatives, UFOs, Secret Societies, and World Control, Keith further explores the connections between UFOs and the conspiracy, which at the time that he wrote the book seemed to think was international fascism marching under the banner of Illuminism, and how they may be using this UFO technology to accomplish a variety of nefarious ends, including a secret space program. In both books, he links the Illuminati and Freemasonry as part of a larger front for the dynastic families whose accumulated wealth forms a military banking industrial front for the conspiracy. Now, a vast number of researchers from a wide variety of political and philosophical disciplines have examined Freemasonry and the Illuminati for centuries now, both in Europe and the New World. Some of these researchers believe that Masonry has been attempting to create the establishment of a theocratic New World Order as symbolized by the reverse side of the Great Seal of the United States of America. Theocracy is the rule of a people or a nation by God, or by priests claiming divine guidance from God, such as the Vatican attempted several centuries ago through the Pope. Some believe that there is one overarching conspiracy, and its purpose is the creation of a theocratic world king. And a number of theocratic worst-case scenarios have been offered, and I'll share one of them with you here. In Saucers of the Illuminati, Jim Keith offered evidence that the following list is the core belief structure of an elite hyperplot. This he believes to be a secret shared only with the highest degrees of the Masonic Order, and only then among a select few, according to Keith. At least one of the major threads of the anti-papal segments of the conspiracy, called by him simply the Illuminati, now believes that, 1, Jesus married Mary Magdalene. 2, Mary Magdalene was pregnant with his seed at the time of the crucifixion. 3, the Holy Grail that the Knights Templar were entrusted with, safekeeping, was no Last Supper wine goblet, just an ordinary cup infused with the magic of the Savior's presence, but was only a metaphor, or perhaps inner circle code, for the very bloodline of Jesus, the pregnant Mary, and the heirs of Jesus. And 4, the Knights Templar were not destroyed by the armies of the Pope at the end of the Crusades, but went underground, perhaps forming Scottish Rite Freemasonry in Scotland. 5, the bloodline of Jesus was mingled with the royal houses of Europe and has survived to this day. 6, there is a living claimant to the throne of this world, to the throne of David and Solomon. A direct heir of Jesus who is very much alive and well and ready to ascend to the throne. And 7, several threads of the conspiracy are planning to rebuild the Temple of Solomon and fulfill their mutual prophecies of the Messiah by installing this claimant on the throne of the New World Order. Now, if that doesn't sound far out enough for you, Masonic literature talks about rebuilding the Temple of Solomon in the hearts of Masons. The evidence seems to indicate that they also plan to rebuild the actual temple, and to do that around the year 2000 or shortly thereafter as is practicable. Now, the conspiracy then may include numbers of a ruling elite who are concerned with preserving their wealth and are true believers in religious dogmas, and possibly some even weird ones at that. One or more factions of the conspiracy may have jumped on the fundamentalist bandwagon. Others could be even kinkier than that. They may practice goddess worship or Satanism and even human sacrifice. The liberal, ecumenical interfaith crowd is actively pushing for a worldwide religious moral ethic to provide a spiritual underpinning for the New World Order. Perhaps somewhat predictably, some folks on the so-called religious right have decried their efforts as an attempt to establish the kingdom of the Antichrist. A number of radical fundamentalist Christian sects desperately desire the end, that is, the death and the resurrection of mankind, into the kingdom of heaven. They think that we're living in the end times, and they are literally waiting for the heavens to open up and for God himself to usher them home. This program is called the Rapture, and when the chosen will be instantaneously transported up to heaven. Others believe that giant UFOs will fly them to the place that God has reserved for them. Now, not all of these Christians are waiting patiently, however. A few actually think that they can cause the end times to occur by making things here on earth so bad that God himself will be forced to act. Some of these people have achieved very high positions. For instance, James Watt, once Secretary of the Interior, whose responsibility was for the preservation and allocation of the natural wealth and resources of the nation. He advocated clear-cutting timber and strip mining in our national forests and other ecologically unconscionable acts because he believed that the second coming of Christ would occur in our lifetimes. So, there was no need to conserve. So, what happens if some of these loonies get into control in government and take over the HAARP program? Is it possible that a satanically inspired conspiracy wishing to commit the ultimate in ritual murder, human sacrifice, might actually attempt to fry the whole planet Earth? You know, this is definitely a possibility, as we've discussed. Several applications of this HARP technology could have life-threatening consequences on a global scale. And remember that Jesus Christ in Matthew 24 said that there would come a time that it would be necessary for God Himself to intervene in world affairs. And if He did not, there would no flesh be saved alive. Was He referring to electromagnetic HARP resonance or thermonuclear war or some combination thereof, or maybe some other technology or combination of technologies to bring about that time on planet Earth? Rents could be torn in the protective layers of the ionization and or ozone layers, irradiating the lands below. As researcher Michael Unum revealed, this may already have happened on a small scale. The experiment with creating an artificial ionosphere by dumping copper needles into the upper atmosphere may have interfered with the Earth's magnetic field, causing earthquakes. Certainly, messing with the electrojet has the potential for causing unpredictable events, perhaps making the magnetic poles change positions, or even bringing about a collapse or a reversal of the Earth's magnetic field. Any such event could be catastrophic for life on this planet, even if some madman does not try to use HARP to destroy the Earth. Could a fundamentalist Christian want to use HARP to do just enough damage to force God's hand? Well, John D. Rockefeller Jr., a globalist extraordinaire, said back in 1917, he said, "I see the church molding the thought of the world as it has never been done before, leading in all great movements as it should. And I see that it literally is establishing the kingdom of God on earth," unquote. Now, if David Rockefeller, who is the chairman of the Trilateral Commission, is today actually attempting to establish a world order, a world government, what is meant by a kingdom of God? Was the elder Rockefeller merely waxing metaphorical, or could they, a leading family of the ruling elite, literally want to establish a religious world king? You know, this makes us want to ask some very serious questions of this interfaith ecumenical movement and the organizations. One prominent organization worthy of such questioning is the Temple of Understanding. It's a significant recipient of Rockefeller funding. They were established back in 1959. It's associated with the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, which is the seat of the Episcopal Bishop of New York. Curiously, the Cathedral of St. John the Divine was also the site of Nikola Tesla's funeral. I don't know that that has a connection, but it's an oddity. Another strange connection to HARP, wouldn't you say? Now, the Temple of Understanding's founders included Dr. Albert Schweitzer, Jawaharlal Nehru, Eleanor Roosevelt, Orthodox Patriarch Athenagoras, he was a former UN secretary, and Secretary General U Thant of the United Nations, the Dalai Lama, and Anwar Sadat, and the pontiffs, two Catholic popes, John the 23rd and Paul the 6th. And it's also closely associated with Mikhail Gorbachev. Mikhail Gorbachev's Green Cross. The Green Cross is a political, spiritual challenging. It's a changeling. It advocates ethical and moral issues relating to ecology. This comes from Mikhail Gorbachev, the communist, the Russian, whose headquarters is in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, California. and has been since the decline and fall of the Soviet Empire. Now, it's a clear penetration of the environmentalist movement by the conspiracy, and I'm afraid that I do not have the space here to do this subject justice. Just research the co-option of the ecological movement by the New World Order, also known as the Communists, as a lifelong environmental activist. What I know of this perversion sets my blood boiling, and it scares the hell out of me. This interfaith movement seems to be directed at more than just generating cooperation and dialogue between the world's religions, but in actuality, creating a single world religion parallel to the single world government. It is charged with creating a universal moral code, and that universal moral code is to be written by Mikhail Gorbachev as per the 1992 Earth Summit held in Rio de Janeiro that will provide the religious, spiritual, and moral foundation for the edicts of the New World Order. Our Constitution is based in part on biblical moral precepts. The New World Order Constitution will be similarly built on this new universal moral code, one written by a hardline communist, or should we say, a reformed hardline communist, Mikhail Gorbachev. Now, to get a clue as to what that code will be, you can read Global Responsibility in Search of a New World Ethic by Hans Kung, board member of the Temple of Understanding. Also, read up on the Green Cross and Agenda 21, signed by 172 nations at the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro. It's also possible that the conspiracy, or a portion thereof, has realized the power inherent in this religious movement. It is merely pretending to be working toward the new age and or second coming, kingdom of Christ, as a guise to shear the sheep. You know, before there were politics, there was religion, and before politicians, there were priests. Different callers, but the same job. Now, the cynic and the atheist have always seen religion as a trick played on humanity by cosmic con artists. The unscrupulous, by definition, have no sacred cows, no moral restraints. So why not take advantage of the religious sheep? It is easy to imagine them thinking, well, if these fools want a second coming, then we'll give them a second coming. Now, just what is the relationship between the religious and the political conspiracies? Well, is this seeming effort to bring about a world religion a case of parallel development, a case of political conspiracy using religion as just another propaganda or conditioning tool to mold the population, to control the population? Is it a control mechanism over us? Or are religionists of one or more persuasions using the political conspiracy to further their own agenda? Well, either way, with HARP, they have an incredible tool for fooling the world, whether they're religious or secular. An example of such potential misuse of this technology can be seen in the effects of the Persinger helmet. The Persinger helmet, it's a brain research tool designed by Dr. Michael Persinger of the Laurentian University of Ontario, Canada. And with it, he discovered in the late 1980s that when specific frequencies are directed into the hippocampus area of the back brain, a large percentage of subjects reported UFO abduction experiences, out-of-body experiences, and a wide range of altered states of consciousness, including union with God. Now, the helmet experience, Dr. Persinger says, involves a widening of emotional meaning, such that things not typically considered significant would now be considered meaningful, and hallucinations are perceived as extremely real. So what could the conspiracy do with this kind of knowledge and a tool like harp, to put a virtual Persinger helmet on all of our heads, all over the world, or in certain areas of the world and populations that we want to control or to deceive. One application that comes readily to mind is the creation of a fake rapture. And as we have seen, the military has announced that they will soon have holographic projectors for disorienting armies. How might the conspiracy use this? Imagine being able to project into the skies above the people of the earth an image of God, or the goddesses or gods of the dominant religion of such regions, Shiva or Buddha or Muhammad or Christ. And while doing this, ecstatic emotions and or engineered states of consciousness are also being beamed at the people. Can you imagine being able to make the people hear the words of the projected God spoken inside their own mind? Imagine being able to tell the people that all gods are the one true God, that the day of fulfillment is now at hand, and then to merge these images in the air into one God. One of the New World Order's design. Well, it seems likely that the conspiracy could get near instantaneous conversion of an overwhelming majority of the Earth's population to any religion of their choosing by such a ploy. The Apostle Paul brought up that very subject. He said that the Antichrist would be doing miracles so that these miracles would deceive the very elect, if it were possible. So miracles are coming. Whether they're true miracles or whether they are fantasies created by harp remains to be seen. All right, we're talking about Freemasonry, Antichrist upon us. I opened the program with a short subject on the conspiracy, which is written by Jerry E. Smith. It's chapter 6 of HARP, the ultimate weapon of the conspiracy. We're just about out of time. Next time we'll take up Freemasonry, now the super Antichrist world power, from the perspective of Masonry. Just how do the Masonry people, that is the Freemasons, fit into this whole concept of the New World Order? All right. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are believed to be true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief and our research. But remember, the Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to the authors and the publishers used on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to you, our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not necessarily mean that the authors or the publications approve of us, recommend us, or will reciprocate in any way. Most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, or sectarian. They may be racial or ethnic partisans, and they may not endorse the opinions or the beliefs expressed here on the Law Hour and editorial review. So don't blame any of my comments on Jerry Smith. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. There's my signal. Says I gotta go. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.